Next is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 27th Chapter, text number 7, given on December 7th, 1993, at the South Temple in Trinidad.
Translation. In executing devotional service, one has to see every living entity equally, without enmity towards anyone, yet without intimate connections with anyone. One has to observe celibacy, be grave, and execute his eternal activities, offering the results to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who seriously engages in devotional service, is equal to all living entities. There are various species of living entities, but a devotee does not see the outward covering. He sees the inner soul inhabiting the body. Because each and every soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he does not see any difference. That is the vision of a learned devotee. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, a devotee or a learned sage does not see any difference between a learned Brahmin, a dog, an elephant, or a cow, because he knows that the body is the outer covering only and that the soul is actually part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. A devotee has no enmity toward any living entity, but that does not mean that he mixes with everyone. That is prohibited. Aprasangata means not to be in intimate touch with everyone. A devotee is concerned with his execution of devotional service, and he should therefore mix with devotees only in order to advance his objective. He has no business mixing with others, for although he does not see anyone as his enemy, his dealings are only with persons who engage in devotional service. There are some more paragraphs in the purport, but I'll speak on these so far and then read some more. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastitadi Satarane. So Kapila Dev is speaking about devotional service, and here are some of the important symptoms of one who's practicing. Sarva Bhuta Samatvena. He sees everyone equally. So this is based on the Bhagavad Gita. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Svapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. The learned sage sees equally these different persons. You've seen this picture in Bhagavad Gita, the illustration. The sadhu is actually seeing these different embodied beings. He sees a learned Brahmin. The Brahmin is reading Shastra, doing some Brahminical activity. Then he sees an elephant going by. Actually, in India, you could see all these things in one place, on a back road or in a town, just as in the illustration. All these things are going by his vision at once. He sees an elephant, a dog, and then an outcast man like a dog eater, or Shudra, low class, by social standing. These particular beings. But he sees that within them, within their heart, there is a super soul in each one, the same, and the soul is the same. The spirit soul in the dog is the same as in the Brahmin. So this should not be taken as an insult to the Brahmin. Oh, are you saying that a Brahmin is no better than a dog? We are saying that spiritually they're equal. The dog is a soul, and due to misbehavior in the past, now by karma, the soul has to take this body. But it's the same soul, the same in quality, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, now covered over, and having to live out a particular kind of karma. So this is a very advanced vision, and you should not imitate it, but you have to practice it at least, and not fall into bodily consciousness or bodily designation. That's the mode of passion. The mode of passion, you see a person, whether that person is a human or an animal, and you see that's the person, that's a dog, that's a black person, a white person, that's a woman, a man, and you actually think that that's the person, their body, and then you may say that they have a soul or something in the body, but whatever it is, that's their actual identity is in terms of that body. That's called seeing or knowledge in the mode of passion. To see everyone as different. But in the mode of goodness, you see the sameness because of spirit. In the mode of ignorance, they cannot see anything. So we should practice this. Wherever, in any place in the world, there's all kinds of prejudices, social designations, caste systems going on the basis of so many considerations. And many wars are being fought, that I belong to the Muslim, I belong to the Jew, I belong to the Christian, and they fight. And the politicians manipulate this ignorance, that you should fight against this group, you should fight against that group. So there's so much agitation that goes on, and the agitation is also in ignorance, that the group who does not have power, they say, oh, no, we should have the power, and the other group says, no, we should have the power, all based on bodily designation. So the Krishna conscious person, he should not be should not see in this way. He should see equally. But there's an interesting qualification, that although the person sees equally, he doesn't treat everyone equally. But he makes a designation. And what is it? That some I shall be very intimate with, and some I shall not be intimate with. Although I shall not be an enemy to anyone, but I shall respect them from a distance, not try to harm them or think ill of them, see them as a spirit soul. But this does not mean I have to associate with them intimately. So what is the basis of not being intimate with some? What is the basis as stated here in the purport by Prabhupada? Because in the verse it doesn't say, it just says, see everyone equally, with enmity towards no one, yet without intimate connections with anyone. So it sounds like the learned person is aloof from everybody in a kind of impersonal way, seeing everyone as spirit, but he doesn't want to get close or attached to anybody. But we need the purport to understand the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada develops it more to say that without intimate connections with anyone means that there should be a certain basis by which you do become intimate with some and not intimate with others. And the sameness is not having malice toward anyone. So what is the basis of intimacy that we would consider some people to be close and some not? What does Prabhupada say? Anyone have heard it? Yeah. Did he say that we should be intimate with the Hindus? Or that we should be intimate with rich people? Or what? Devotees. This is the point. He says, aprasangataha means not to be in intimate touch with everyone. A devotee is concerned with his execution of devotional service. He should therefore mix with devotees only. So, you've just got to find if someone is a devotee, and then you can cut across the lines. I may be in a white body, but if I see a white non-devotee, I don't want to associate with him. If I see a black body devotee, I do want to associate with him. And that's the only designation I make. That where is a devotee? Satsanga. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido. This is the basis that the Hare Krishna movement is spreading all over the world, Prabhupada's broad vision, that which was the vision of Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, who broke so many social codes in India, where they said, only if you're born a Brahmin can you be given the Brahmin thread, and only then can you become a sannyasi, only then could you become a guru. Even you cannot enter certain temples unless you're in the right Brahminical or the right caste identity. So the Shastras don't say this. The Shastras say you judge a person by the quality. The person may be born in a Shudra family or even a dog-eater family, but if they have become elevated by association with a pure devotee, then they have to be considered by their actual karma, guna karma, their karma, activity, and their qualities. Therefore, the low-born person we will accept as a Brahmin if they act as a Brahmin. So this was revolutionary, so there were people who were very much against Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur. Sometimes when he had parikrams, he would go to holy places like Vrindavan, and envious people, they would hire some gundas to throw stones at the devotees, and some of the caretakers of the temples would say, we cannot let your devotees in the temple because you give Brahmin threads to people who are low-born, and this is not good. And then when Srila Prabhupada followed in this way, he made such great success in the Western countries. For the first time in entire history of the modern age, people became devotees of Krishna, gave up sinful activities in Western countries, and then they came back to India. For the most part, they were very well received, and they impressed the Indians, because people in India, they're imitating the West. So they said, all these Westerners who have so much money, and they have what we want, but they've taken to Hare Krishna, this is our culture. Maybe it is something good, and we've neglected our own culture. This was Prabhupada's strategy. But other people with various vested interests, some of the caste-conscious Brahmins, they said, Swami Bhaktivedanta is ruining the Hindu religion. And he met this kind of opposition by explaining in terms of the Shastra, I'm not ruining. Rather, your Hindu religion is dying up like a disconnected branch from the tree of Lord Chaitanya for not seeing the dynamic nature of Krishna consciousness, that everyone is spirit soul. The dog is spirit soul. The elephant is spirit soul. The low-class man is spirit soul. And at least among the human beings, they are all eligible to take to Krishna consciousness. Kirata, Hunindra, Pulinda, Polkasha, Abhira, Shamba, Yavana, Kasharaya. That's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a list of different tribes, including different uncivilized tribes and so on. The Karatas, the Hunindras, the Pulindas, the Polkashas, Yavanas. Yavanas means, these can even be designated in terms of nations of the world. Yavanas, Kashadas. Yavanas means sometimes it's interpreted as Turks, and Kashadas, Africans. In this way, the Pulinda Polkasha, Abhira Shamba, Yavana Kashadaya, Yene, Yapasya, Pasraya, Shujanti Tasmaya, Pavavishname Nama. All these people, even of tribes, can be purified because the holy name and devotional service is so powerful. This acceptance of all people, regardless of their bodily designation, is due to, it's not somebody's whimsical acceptance. Yes, we will accept them. And it's not an acceptance without their being qualified, but rather it's an acceptance based on the power of the holy name. For example, Gandhi, he also agitated that people should be accepted regardless of their social position, but his motive was political. He saw that he wanted to favor the bungies or the untouchables, those who clean the sewers and the streets and who are downtrodden in India. So he saw the social injustice, and he said, so there were prohibitions that these people cannot enter the temple. So he said, no, they are actually Harijans. He created this movement called Harijan. Harijan means son of God, person of God. They should come into the temple. There should be no bar. So he started protests that they would just force their way into the temple. Well, so what does Prabhupada think of this? He says that the idea that they, the bhangi, should be allowed to come into the temple and serve in the temple is all right, but he should be qualified first. He should be purified, cleansed, and trained in order to do it, not just by some political agitation, but by actual reformation. Gandhi is just making a rubber stamp using this sacred word, Harijan, calling the untouchables Harijan, to make some political move. But he could actually be called Brahman after he becomes qualified and gives up his bad habits, because the untouchable, the low-class person, by habit has so many bad activities, they have to give them up. Give up smoking, drinking, illicit sex, intoxication, be brahminical, be clean. Then you can be called Hari Das, Hari Jan, and so on. So we should be aware of this transcendental nature of Krishna consciousness beyond bodily designation. So now we're reading on. A devotee should observe the vow of celibacy. Celibacy does not necessitate that one be absolutely free from sex life. Satisfaction with one's wife is permitted also under the vow of celibacy. The best policy is to avoid sex life altogether. That is preferable. Otherwise, a devotee can get married under religious principles and live peacefully with a wife. So each word is being defined. Sarva Bhuta Samatvena has been defined, and now he goes to, in the next line, a prasangata, nirvairena, without enmity. Again, sarva bhuta samatvena, you should see equally all bhutas, all beings, nirvairena apra, without being enemy of them, and asangataha, but don't be intimate with all of them, just with the devotees. Then, brahmacharyena. So brahmacharyena means don't indulge in sex life. It's very difficult to teach this in Kali Yuga, but if people persist in indulging in illicit sex, it cannot make any spiritual advancement, it break the laws of nature, and they cannot attain God consciousness and cannot be happy. So this Hare Krishna movement is a little difficult to preach these things against all the ignorance. When Prabhupada was preaching strongly against illicit sex, when he first came to America, one of the devotees wanted to give Prabhupada some advice. He said, "Prabhupada, the people are really going to be turned away when they hear you say don't have sex. They all want sex. I don't think this philosophy will be acceptable to Americans." Prabhupada said, "I cannot change the philosophy to suit the Americans." So, we compromise, but preach the truth. And people who want the truth, who are honest, they will admit that I've tried so much sexual activity, but I don't become happy by it. Let me try to purify myself. And Prabhupada doesn't just say, you can't have this pleasure, which everyone is after, but he gives us another kind of pleasure instead, the pleasure of spiritual life, by which we can control the senses and avoid illicit sex. We have that drive, the senses want sex pleasure, but it's a lower drive and it should be controlled and subdued. In the spiritual world, in the spiritual body, we don't have that sex desire. You become purified of it, and as a result, you can enjoy immense happiness many, many more times than this limited sex pleasure, sex potency, which goes after so many years anyway. And even while it's present, is the source of so many miseries because you break the natural laws. And that now they're trying so many things to persist in sex pleasure. So the devotee should observe the vow of celibacy, brahmacharyena. Then maunena. A devotee should not speak needlessly. A serious devotee has no time to speak of nonsense. He is always busy in Krishna consciousness. Whatever he speaks, He speaks about Krishna. Mona means silence. Silence does not mean that one should not speak at all, but that he should not speak of nonsense. He should be very enthusiastic in speaking about Krishna. So, literal silence means that sometimes a guru tells a disciple, be quiet, don't speak at all. Take a vow that you don't speak. Because he sees this person is so talkative, so prajalpa always, that he should observe just being silent. In another place, Prabhupada talks about silence. I think in the qualities of women, one of the qualities is silence, perhaps. But another place it is, Krishna says, of secrets I am silence. Maybe not with women. They ought to be silent if they're talking prajalpa. Of secret things I am silence. And there Prabhupada says, by silence one can make spiritual advancement very quickly. And the word here is, another word is, that Prabhupada translates it. He doesn't translate it as silence. He says one has to observe celibacy, be grave. So grave means you keep your mind, you keep your thoughts to yourself, your inner thoughts. It's not that an uncontrolled person is always wagging the tongue, always blabbing. Whatever's on their mind, they say. It can't be deep to keep some thoughts sometimes within yourself, to meditate on Krishna. If the situation is not conducive to always talking, then you become silent. You be grave. Especially when you are around people, they're all talking prajalpa. Then, if you speak about Krishna, sometimes they'll be blasphemous, or they'll say, "Oh, what are you talking about, Krishna? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that." So better that I don't even reveal my mind. So I'm explaining some situations whereby we would practice actual silence of not speaking anything, or not speaking Krishna consciousness. There might be some situation, like a disciple who is so nonsense that the guru tells him, be quiet, don't talk anything. That would be good for him. Like a child who can't do anything but naughty. Whatever they do is naughty, naughty. Going here, going there, breaking something, doing something wrong, making noise. So you say, be quiet, sit there, don't do anything, because they can't do anything constructive. But if the child grows up and learns to behave a little, then you can tell them so many things. Go get this now, go do this, go do that. And the child will happily start doing constructive things. So that's better than having to tell them to not do anything. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. In Krishna consciousness, mona doesn't mean the complete silence, but talking only about Krishna. And rather, you should be enthusiastic. We shouldn't be silent like that. I don't want to talk about Krishna. That's not being grave. That's just being dull. Don't be dull, Prabhupada said. But express your realization about Krishna. Say, glorify Krishna. And chant Hare Krishna. Don't be silent in that sense. So this is the meaning of monena. Then, another important item described here is svadharmena, or being exclusively occupied in one's eternal occupation, which is to act as the eternal servitor of the Lord, or to act in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gives unique meanings to these words, more than you would get in ordinary Sanskrit in the dictionary. Dharma. He says dharma means eternal activities of devotional service as a servant of Krishna. A devotee should always be doing it. That's our business. Like the karmi, they get up in the morning and they do their business. Or the birds too. They're always busy. The chicken and the chicks, they're busy. They're looking for something to eat. And the other animals are looking for something to eat. They start their business as soon as they get up. So a devotee, he should be about his business. Go about his business. His business is to serve Krishna. It may be he's serving in the deity room, or he's chanting the holy names of Krishna. Do your dharmena, your eternal activities. And then the next and the last word is baliyasa, means offering the results of all activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee does not act on his personal account for sense gratification. Whatever he earns, whatever he eats, and whatever he does, he offers for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an art we have to learn, that when we do something, it's not just for ourself, but somehow it has to go to Krishna. And we want to be confident that what we do is going to Krishna. So we offer it through the spiritual master or through the process by saying prayer. We offer food to the deity and give money to the temple. See that what you do goes to Krishna. This is called baliyasa, making an offering of your work rather than doing it and trying to enjoy it for yourself. Make an offering of all your activities. So this is the purport finished. Now, if you have any questions, we've covered all these separate items. Sarvabhuta samatvena, nirvairena, prasangataha, brahmacharyena, monena, spadharmena, baliyasa. Are there any questions on any of them? The first, yes.
Sometimes devotees do speak topics that relate to devotional service, but it's so sometimes it's so fast, sometimes they're speaking, and then they're relating different topics all to it. And one devotee is saying, what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to make it transcendental prajata? Is there anything such as we can be, you know, sometimes we're speaking?
Yeah, we can, as Prabhupada says, the jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness goes everywhere. It's Krishna consciousness commentary can cover politics, family life, you name it, almost anything. Krishna consciousness has a right there. It has something to say. So, so in the course of prosecuting Krishna consciousness or speaking about Krishna, you may talk about anything. But it should be for the purpose of Krishna, not indulging in that topic as your main interest and then making some watered-down connection or reference to Krishna. So the heart and the mind should be really fixed on some kind of Krishna katha or preaching about Krishna, in which case you might talk about so many things. For example, say you're talking about raising donations for the temple. Some of the leaders, whose responsibility it is, they may be planning how are we going to raise money. And then somebody may say it is very difficult because of such and such a financial condition in the country now. So they may be talking. They may, in the course of their talk, they may talk about the economy of the country. And then somebody may say, how if the country was run in a Krishna conscious way, how the economy could be adjusted. But these kind of comments might be made. But as you say, unless we're careful, it can turn into what indulging in these material topics. And then afterwards, you realize, oh, we're talking prajalpa, and to try to cover it up, you say something a little bit Krishna conscious to try to connect it. So it should be obviously for Krishna conscious purposes that you're in this other area. So we have to try to avoid that. That will happen when our taste actually changes. So when we read the scriptures and everything is so nice, it's 100% Krishna katha. We talk about that. Just see how Prabhupada wants us to live with devotees, talk about Krishna only, really stay protected within the spiritual energy. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivam prakriti masrita. The Mahatmas, they're within the spiritual energy always, not the material energy. So we really have to protect ourselves, otherwise the material energy is there. It's like here we're talking about Krishna, and then a car goes by, he's invading our space with another sound vibration, competition. So it's always like that. Unless you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, you start hearing Maya instead. We have to tolerate that, but keep coming back to Krishna activities. Yes, Peter?
In reference to the consciousness of the world, you explained what the means of Prabhupada mentioned that since there is a soul and the consciousness of the soul, a human being, as well as animal, separately realized soul is here in the
how the realized soul sees,
yes,
sees the soul in the...
Yes, and the consciousness of the soul is human being as well as animal. And the self-realized soul is a kind of...
I think of one time Prabhupada was talking with some professors and he was talking how we shouldn't kill animals. Shouldn't kill the cow and shouldn't kill animals. And he said, Prabhupada said something, I don't remember exactly, something about love, that this is love. And so the professor, in an objecting way, he says, are you saying that love means not to kill? Because he wanted a deeper definition of love than just that, not to kill somebody. Does that mean love? And Prabhupada defended that statement. He said, yes, it is one of the items of love, not to kill. Because if you kill, then how can you be kind? There may be more things to be kind. I would hope there is. Just because I don't kill you, that doesn't mean that I've completed my loving exchange with you. But if my intention is to kill you, then there's no question of love. So the human beings, they have this attitude towards the animals that sooner or later we're going to kill them. Even they take care of them. Sometimes we preach in areas where there are farmers, dairy farmers and cattle raisers, and they hear our preaching one way or another. They see something in the newspaper and they realize what we're saying, that we're saying that their activities are hellish and they shouldn't do them, and they take offense. And there was one time where a man was defending. He said, what you say is not true, that we are so cruel to the animals. He said, well, we take care of our cows very nicely. I'm always worrying about them, whether they're sick and if they're cold, and we go into the barn and take care of them. So actually they're so deluded that he thinks that he is taking care of the animals. But what he's thinking of is, when shall I kill them? As soon as the cow stops giving a little bit in her milk, then we'll kill her. Or when the price is right, when she is fat enough. So it's simply to kill the animals. So kindness has to start with that this is a living being. God gave this living being life, and I have no right to take the life. If I do such an act, it'll be very bad karma for me, and I'll have to come back and suffer that karma by being killed myself. In other words, our teaching to be kind to animals, it's based on real solid laws of nature and everything. And as with everything, Krishna consciousness is so advanced and so scientific. Throughout the world now, there's a growing movement of animal protection in many places. People are objecting that animals should not be used to make cruel experiments on them in laboratories to test some product. They put something in the animal's eyes to see if it will sting them, and then if it doesn't sting them, then they can sell it to the human beings. So many horrible tortures are being done to animals. So people are raising up and saying, stop this, stop torturing the animals, protect the animals. But Only Krishna consciousness has all the facts about why this should be done. So we should take the leadership in this kind of activity. Whenever people are wanting to protect the animals, the real basis is that they are spirit souls just as good as we are. And if you cause them pain, then you'll have to suffer pain as reaction. And all the details. So I don't know what else you want me to say about being kind. The point is, however, that he's kind to all, but he treats them in a different way. Prabhupada gave the example of the tiger, that you don't embrace the tiger. But I just saw, there was a big advertisement in the New York Times by one animal protection league just about the tiger. It said that by the year 2000, the tiger will be extinct from the planet Earth because there's especially a fad of people to drink the soup made of tigers. And so they're paying very high fees. $45,000 they're paying to have a bowl of soup made of this tiger. And so they're buying, there's only 1,000 tigers left in India. And they had the whole list of tigers on the earth. It was about 2,000. And so at the rate they're being killed, they'll be gone. So they're gone by in 6 or so years. And then there'll be no elephants, there'll be no whales, there'll be no... All these species were created by God, and man is so arrogant, he's wiping them out. Plus, he's going to wipe out the human species also. So he cannot actually get away with this. But I was making the point of this... So the devotee, he loves them all, but he has... So he would also say, don't kill the tiger. But then, what do you do with the tiger? You leave the tiger alone, leave him in the jungle, and you do your business. And Prabhupada even said that saintly persons, they used to share the jungle with the tigers. And the tigers saw their intent, saw the super soul in the sadhu's heart, and left the sadhu alone. And the sadhu would give him something to eat. That was real advanced culture. But he does not try to educate the tiger or to embrace the tiger. So there's no enmity to all, but different kind of relations.